Now here in RNIB Connect Radio, we feature some really fascinating life stories, and today is no exception. Jamie McDonald lost his sight due to retinitis pigmentosa and gave up his career in finance to pursue his dream of becoming a stand-up comedian. Jamie, thank you so much for joining me here in the studio today. Now, I am so excited to have you here on the programme because there's so much I want to ask you, and I don't know where to start, but I think probably the most obvious place would be the fact that you are a blind comedian. How did you lose your sight?
Well, I've got RPE, retinitis pigmentosa, so I didn't really know I was going to lose my sight until kind of like mid-teens, fun times, and it just started to go then. It went downhill. And I believe it's going to continue to go downhill. I don't really go to the hospitals much anymore because I've kind of decided until they've got a cure for it, there is not really much point in me going there. I only find out that there's a lot of like white mice getting cured and stuff at the moment. So I just end up very jealous.
I know exactly what you mean. It's funny because a lot of people come up to me and say, you know, there's this breakthrough treatment for blind people and, you know, there's a possibility you might be able to get your sight back. And I think a lot of people are just, you know, their intentions are very good and kind, but they don't realise that one eye condition is completely different to another and they can't all be cured the same way. So, yeah, I get that. Completely. But, you know, you were a teenager when you lost your sight.
I
take it you were in mainstream school at the time.
I was Uddingston Grammar. And then they had kind of like the VI unit in there, which is pretty handy. And there was a fantastic few teachers. I got my textbooks blown up to A3. That didn't make you stand out at all. And like this, what was it? That raised board is like bring the book to you. And, you know, you're trying to be pretty cool in high school. You're sitting around with a kind of massive magnifying glass and a little telescope going, all right, what are you doing? You know? But I remember, like, one of my shows, I did try and push that to the kind of nth degree and just to see what I could get away with an audience. And I created an NHS alert bell, which was totally false. But I kind of got people to think that I had to walk around school shaking a little bell to alert people to me wanting path. And it was quite amazing that folk believed that.
See, that's brilliant. You know, a lot of people will ask me about my guide dog and how the dog knows where he's going. And I say that I program him in the morning. You know, I lift one ear. And once I've told him what I'm doing for the day, then I just tap his ear three times.
I don't trust guide dogs. That's
why
I don't have one. I just think they're always going to eat. Despite where you ask them to go, they'll take you to the park. I think there's just like a kind of load of blind guys just hanging about going like, don't tell anybody, take me to the park again. I've just got a dog and it's not a guide dog, and that is confusing people. Like, I'm walking up to them with this mad little spaniel on the thing and they're thinking, that guide dog's a bit rubbish, you know?
Oh, that's hilarious. Now, you did start to lose your sight as a teenager, as we've already established. And I know that you're a very, very clever guy. Obviously, didn't hold you back at school because you were studying history.
Yeah, I did ancient history at St Andrews, a very nice little sleepy university up there until Prince William, he came. Suddenly, you know, you're just in a little quiet, little bastion of education up in the East Nook of Fife, and then wham! Every kind of like wannabe princess just arrived, and all the kind of people who wanted to be part of Prince William's entourage just made that town hell. It went from being really quiet to really busy, but it was very nice. I got my degree up there.
Were you there at the same time?
He came a couple of years after, I think. Yeah, so I had a couple of years apiece.
All right, okay.
And then how do you compete with Prince William, do you know what I mean? You're like, hey guys, I've got a light of white stick and I've got a nice big magnifying glass. Or you could be queen.
Yeah, but from what I've heard, I think nowadays you'd probably be better looking.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, he's baldy now, isn't he?
Bald. Nothing wrong with baldy men, but just saying. Anyway, you did get your degree there and then you went up to Aberdeen to study law.
Oh yeah, because we were kind of fed a line at the start of university. You were saying, like, you know, it's not the subject that interested, it's the level of education. And that turned out to be, no, it's not. Like, not if the level of education is in ancient history. You know, there's not really much call for ancient historians. So I just kind of, like, took a breath and then went back and did the conversion course up at Aberdeen, which is the two-year conversion. And I got the LLB up in Aberdeen. And that, moving from St Andrews to Aberdeen, it's like, whoa, I'm in the city. It was huge. It's like, there's more than four streets. This is amazing.
So how did you actually cope with your studies up there? Because it was, in fact, while you were up there that you started to use a cane for the first time, because you'd been in sort of cane denial. I don't know about you. For a long time, I was kind of too vain to cane. And I think you were pretty much in the same situation, weren't you? You just didn't want to use it at all.
You've done an alarming amount of research ahead of this show. How do you know that? Where did you get that from? Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. No, I did. I got to that point in St Andrews where I was definitely needing to use a stick and wasn't. And I'm ramming into people. I was just looking rude. But I'd already been kind of 4 years or 5 years at St Andrews. So when I first went there, I probably should have been using a cane from the start, but I probably got away with not. But then by the end of uni, I wasn't really, but I was still there. So that kind of like 4 year gap, you know, suddenly being the same person that you'd known for 3 or 4 years, suddenly use a white stick. It was just crazy. So when I went to Aberdeen, I kind of went with the mission. It's like, right, new place, new degree, new city, let's cane it. And I did. And it was fantastic, actually. It was very liberating.
Liberating, yeah, I'd imagine so. Although you never actually got any formal training, did you?
No.
You're very naughty, James.
I don't like this stuff like this, you know. Like, I just kind of poke it about, spin it. People kind of know, fall down the occasional flight of stairs. I don't know. It seems to do okay.
It's actually quite good for ankle smacking if you're in a busy environment. So, you know, I'd have to agree with you there. But yes, you didn't have any formal training. Why was that, though?
I think because I got a white stick and I didn't use it for, like, years. And I think when they gave me it, they tried to give me mobility training on it. But I mean, mobility training is a joke. Literally, it's in my show about how much of a joke it is, because I just moved to a new flat in Glasgow and I asked for mobility training, right, from the council. I moved into that flat in March last year and they phoned me up, no joke, a couple of weeks ago to see if I still wanted it. And it's like, it's been a year. I found the way. You know,
so it's funny. Sometimes you hear of things like that. It was a bit like me in bereavement counselling. I was kind of 2 years after my mother died. I got a phone call saying, you know, we're ready to counsel you. I was like, well, you know, that's been and gone.
I'm back.
Absolutely. Incredible. So, yeah. Absolutely incredible.
My plan was to leave, was just to invite them round and just leave a big skeleton in the hall. For them to find, like, clutching a white stick and a bag for life, you know?
Oh, dear, oh, dear. So, anyway, listen, you left Aberdeen. What did you do once you had your law degree?
Once I had my law degree, I went down to London and I went into corporate finance with Bank of Scotland Corporate. And I worked down there for a few years and it was fun, but I never really got on with banking. It was never really my thing. I was more kind of into, well, comedy, drama. I did drama A-level and stuff like that, and corporate finance. Like, we'd go to the pub after work and it's like, man, you guys are still talking about work. You must find this interesting, you know. So it's not really my bag. I was not very good at it. I didn't really know what I did. I was in a big kind of corporation. And that's when I started kind of doing a little bit of open mic in comedy.
Right, because it was also the recession that kind of put an end to your banking career, wasn't it?
If I was an X-Man, my power would be a cataclysmic event to solve quite a simple problem. Because, like, it took the global recession and credit crunch to just, like, get me voluntary redundancy. I could have just quit, but, you don't want to quit. So it's like, they offered me voluntary redundancy. It's like, yes, I'm out of here, you know? And then, started just kind of doing comedy, writing and voiceovers.
Well, we will talk a bit about your comedy now because...
Good, I've been waiting. With talking about St Andrews and all that, you know? It's like, when we get on, I've got a show, you know? Let's do this.
Well, I might not now.
All right, sorry. I do apologise. Yes, it was a terrible time.
I have to say, Jamie, I came to see you at the Stand Comedy Club here in Glasgow about a year ago, maybe. It might be a bit longer. And you were on the bill with Stu Hu. It was an R&IB event.
Yes.
And I cannot tell you how incredibly funny. And this is not lip service because I wouldn't say it otherwise and people know that of me. But I've heard other blind comedians before and sometimes I think, you know, blind humour can be a little bit obvious. Now, maybe that's because I'm a blind person. Other people have found it funny because they're not blind, whereas I found it a wee bit too obvious. And maybe it's because I've found myself in certain situations. Now, the funny thing is, I found myself in situations that were similar to yours, but you were absolutely hysterical in the way you told your stories. And I have never laughed so much at a gig.
Well, that's a blushing here. Thanks. No, that's very kind. That's lovely feedback. Yeah, thank you very much. I don't intend to go out as a blind, you know, the humour's not always blind, but if I'm talking about a story, like, I've not got sight in it, so you've got to you've got to put the blindness into it, you know, because it just makes it real. And people just laugh at real events. I know when to stop crossing the line. You know, I'm never going to go onto stage and start talking about how, like, Jaws is bad on Facebook, because that just won't translate. But there's stuff like, I talk about, like, my wife, you know, we've just got married, and, you know, my wife, I thought, you know, would use you to set up home with and have children and all that. My wife just uses me to skip queues.
Oh, listen, yeah my husband does that as well. And so did my mother. She was a great one for actually fighting with car park attendants because there was no space.
Yeah, it's brilliant. My wife is living the para la vida loca. She is absolutely loving it. She gets all the perks, blue badge. You know, half price TV license. I think we get something off her train tickets. It's wonderful.
Yeah,
She's loving it. And so I talk about all that, and people, like blind people and sighted people, can relate to it, because I'm, you know, I intend to appeal to a broad church.
Well, you certainly do. I mean, obviously, people get their inspiration from something or somebody, and I just thought your sense of humour and the way you went about telling the stories were so relatable to somebody that had lost their sight, but also the people around me who were all sighted were absolutely killing themselves as well. So, you know, it was really refreshing, really, really cool. Refreshing to hear that. And I enjoyed it thoroughly. I really did. Who are your inspirations?
Comedy wise, there's so many. You know, there's like the old guard, you know, like I really like, of course, you've got Billy Connolly, and then you get Kevin Bridges, and all the Scottish guys are really good. And there's some really good guys that you probably won't know, like Susie McCabe and guys from the circuit that are very, very funny. Gary Little, there's Ray Bradshaw, some good guys. And then the big names like Dylan Moran. I like the storytellers, you know that, because that's what I am. I just get a subject and I'm doing new stuff just now on like Polish weddings. I'm doing, actually, I'm doing some stuff on the RNIB.
Okay.
I might do it at the RNIB gig, we'll have to see. I just want to see if the RNIB's got a sense of humour. I won't go in too far. The RNIB are lovely. Talking book service is smashing.
They are indeed. And we're going to talk about that in just a little while. But when did you actually realise that you were a funny guy and wanted to take it further? Because I know a lot of very, very funny people, but they wouldn't necessarily get up and want to entertain people on stage. In fact, that is a really, really brave thing to do.
I did the open mic stuff, and I did that first, and I really, really enjoyed it. I got really nervous, but the open mic scene now is, it's not that you just think, right, I want to do a bit of comedy, and you phone up a comedy club and say, can I do your open mic night? They go, yeah, sure, we've got a slot free in a year and a half. I think I got, it was the Comedy Cafe in Shoreditch, which is sadly closed now, but I phoned up, you know, I built up the courage, and I said, can I get a slot? I said, yeah, come down in October. It's like February. It's like, God. So you're like panicking, like you put out your mind for a bit, but you're panicking. You've got to kind of drum up, and you just got 5 minutes, and so that's just the build after 6 months. And then, you know, like, come on, and you got, and it went very well, and I had a really good time. But then I'd left banking, and I was actually doing a bit of writing. I was trying to write some film scripts for some people, and then I wrote a play in 2012 with a mate, and that was all right. And we put it on at the Fringe, and it got not bad reviews. It got some terrible reviews, and I remember thinking, like, they were all on stage and I wasn't. I just produced it and written it, and thought, I was quite jealous of that. And then I thought in 2013, like, I'll just go for it. And I wrote a show, and I got involved with a theatre director who I still work with today, a guy called Tony Cowney, who works at the Lyceum, and we put shows together. I'm now working on my fifth Edinburgh Fringe show, solo show, called Designated Driver.
Just fantastic, it really is. And do you make a full-time living out of comedy now, then?
I make a full-time living out of comedy, and I do voiceovers as well. So I've done, you know, some stuff on TV and radio for whoever does it. I mean, to be honest, like, I will voice over napalm if you pay me. I don't take ethics into the sound booth. Voiceovers and comedy, I managed to get my money.
Fantastic. Well, you mentioned talking books earlier on, and I know that you are a fan of talking books, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, ever since there was that big weird tape thing.
Do you know, I never had the big weird tape
Did
thing.
You not?
I don't know if that was after my time.
It was 2000. I think they started sending out CDs in about 2004 or 5, that kind of time, I think. And then went to CDs, and now it's digital. Now you'd have to do anything.
I know, it's fantastic,
really,
isn't
good.
It?
Very good.
Really, really good. And to be able to kind of get it at the drop of a hat, and like everybody else, I think is a fantastic thing as well. It's so accessible.
Until you get one of those ones that was recorded in the 70s, don't you?
Mrs. Partridge was away, other way, and we wanted to... So,
and all the characters are the same voice. And I was the same voice, hello.
Can I tell you something? Do you know, the first book I ever got was Mrs. Robinson's Day Out. I was living in Southern Ireland at the time, so it was an Irish kind of talking book. It was a dear little old lady that had read this book, but it was just so not aimed at me. I mean, I was 19 and I was, you know, wanting, you know, to have a boyfriend, and I was going out clubbing with my pals. Yeah. So Mrs. Robinson's Day Out wasn't really my kind of thing. But in saying that, it didn't put me off, you know, and not all books. It's like anybody has their site. You're not going to enjoy every book that you pick up, but it is such a remarkable service. It really, really is.
Oh, it's wonderful. I'm being very cheeky there, but I am just seeing the modern day recordings that are done kind of professionally.
Oh, exactly. It's night
wonderful.
And day.
Yeah.
Absolute night and day. Well, you know that Talking Books used to come on vinyl.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they started out on vinyl. And I think you used to get about 6 boxes of vinyl.
Oh, I remember the RNIB tapes.
Uh-huh.
When I first went to St Andrews, it was still tape. I think it was ordering Wuthering Heights and a book called Beloved and another couple of key texts that were quite big books. And a prison sack full of tapes arrived. Like, I'm talking like 150 tapes.
Swag bag.
I was like, this is unmanageable. Like, I just couldn't get it. And it was all these Wuthering Heights. You know, it's like, oh man, it's these guys again. And I failed English.
Well, listen, speaking of talking books, you do have a gig coming up later on this month, don't you? And it's an aid of RNIB and Talking Books.
It certainly is. It's in the Edinburgh Stand, which is a fantastic club. It is on the 28th. It's next week, isn't it? No, it's 2 weeks. It's the 28th of March. I think about 8 o'clock at night, and I'm on, and Tom Stade's on. He's an excellent, he's a very funny guy. He's done Live at the Apollo and everything. He's a Canadian guy.
You did a joke last year when I saw you about getting out of a taxi as a blind superhero, blind man. Yeah. And stepping in Dogter and going into your shooting with the nuns. And it was absolutely comical. It really was. I have never laughed so much in all my life. So I do hope you revisit that at some point.
I might do. That will be in the greatest hits. That was from my show Oblivious from 2015. Like at the end of an Edinburgh Fringe, I just shoot the show dead and start a new one. So it's very, very funny.
It's so good to catch up with you, Jamie. It really, really is. It's been so fascinating talking to you. You've also got a website where all your gigs are listed. So give us your website.
Yep, www.jamie-mcdonald.co.uk. And I'm also on Twitter and Facebook at That Funny Blind Guy.
And I take it it's all fully accessible.
It's not actually, it's got a lethal set of stairs.
Jamie, you have a great gig, and thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much.